Welcome to Cafe SoCo, your insight to social media and content marketing with Dan Gold in London and Roland Hume in New York.
Hello, welcome to a Cafe SoCo special. My name's Dan Gold, as the intro kind of hinted. No Roland Hume today. He's off in New York working his hardest. I've got with me today Matthew Gardner. I'm sat on a roof in, well, it's kind of Clerkenwell, isn't it?
Clerkenwell Street, yeah.
Yeah. Firstly, which building are we on top of and why is this building in existence, do you feel?
We're on top of Google Campus. It exists to serve the local community and to really be a bit of a hub for Silicon Roundabout and really to draw everybody in from this kind of immediate area around Hackney to try and help integrate tech with the rest of the community.
So if we take this back a stage, you've come from the corporate environment to a very different environment. How was that step? How was that change?
Great, very easy, quite seamless. I came here with a tech product that I wanted to develop, and now I'm helping other people develop their tech products. So pretty seamless, really, because there's plenty of activity here. It's a real hub.
Is it sometimes a difficult change for people going from the regular 9-to-5, or as we know, the 9-till-whenever environment, to kind of working for yourself?
Depends what you're working on, depends how much fluency there is, depends how much currency, depends how much planning. It can be, when things get tough, it's difficult working for yourself. When things are easy, when things are flowing, it's quite simple.
Why do you think Google got involved in this building and this way of working?
Imagine the building came up in the right kind of place. This is Silicon Roundabout, where I think there are 36,000 new businesses. So very good place to be in the heart of. And I think they know there's an opportunity to help startup businesses begin. There's a big startup ecosystem evolving now in London. It's now big enough for us to have really substantial offerings coming out of it. So Mindcandy, big one to think about. Obviously Moonfruit, another one. Several other high worth, high growth tech companies emerging from it. So I think just looking at data alone, there's enough to know that this is the area in Britain, one of the biggest areas in Europe, where there's a real boom in tech activity. And it serves as a hub for all the other hubs around Britain too.
Do you think that it's kind of a smart way for Google and other organisations to work, to not keep an eye on what's happening around them, but be aware of evolution in trends and see new business growth and potentially invest in products and services?
That's absolutely it. I think awareness is really it. And being part, as Easy Vidra, head of Google Campus here and Google Ventures in Europe, says, it's an ecosystem. That's what tech is. You have to be part of it. I deal with high growth tech companies. I represent them. I also lecture sometimes, and I'm very willing to learn from students, from other people in the industry. There's so much information, a big glut of information. Everyone's rushing through their screens at 60 miles an hour. Now no one's looking at billboards anymore. Everything's being presented to you through tech. So there's so much there. You have to be part of an ecosystem to really know what's going on.
I suppose it's a case that if you're within the ecosystem itself, if there's a bit of a buzz around your product and your company, it's going to get heard of quicker than if you're in a rural environment on your own in the back of a farm.
Absolutely, yes. Until you break out from that environment, you're never really going to be known. But here, not only will you be known, you'll find ways to be known, you'll find ways to develop, you'll find ways to iterate. Remember, failure is part of the equation in tech growth as well. So you'll find ways to fail quickly and succeed quickly too. That's really what it is.
So when we first met, I was attending the course at the University of the Arts London, the Communication College. Why did you decide, when you went from the corporate world, that you'd not only get involved in your own enterprise, but you'd also do some lecturing as well?
I think there's a good case to be involved in edtech. Education technology and biotechnology, medical technology, the two biggest growth areas coming up. So very good place to be involved with. There's another ecosystem to be involved with there too. Also enjoy teaching. So you never know who you're going to come across in that kind of environment, but enjoy being able to communicate this, the benefits of this way of working. And really, yeah, just about being involved more than anything else and taking my place in it. As I studied tech for 5 years in thought leadership, I knew I had a lot to bring to it. And from that, I would get a lot back. But in this environment, you have to give first and think about the end user before you get anything back.
There's a big investment in the phrase pay it forwards at the moment. That's something really to believe in.
Yeah, it really is. Pay it forwards for a very long time. Thinking about intangibles, more important than ever, really. Whatever you give, whatever investment you make will be returned, but you can't quite specify how.
We were talking just earlier, sat on this beautiful roof terrace on top of this building, in the sunshine, just having had a piece of toast and some coffee, that we're really fortunate being geographically based here, where you've got to look at how the environment has changed in places like Ukraine. You've got some incredibly talented people, but the environment and opportunity has changed with what's been happening there. Is it something that we should reach out and help people over there at the moment? Is there a way to do it, do you think?
I think the most important evolution, if you like, is the availability of data. So it's certainly possible to help, but it's certainly easier to find out what on earth is going on in any particular place, certainly in Ukraine at the moment, and help appropriately. If you look at FloodHack that was held here, I think, 3 weeks ago, that was an idea on a Friday afternoon by ConverSocial. They spoke about it at number 10. By Sunday evening, a hack had been completed with, I think, seven big outcomes, seven applications. All the major players were here. It was full all weekend. So an idea on Friday afternoon suddenly to fruition on Sunday evening with, I think, probably about 300 people engagement actually offline here. It's certainly possible to cluster around verticals and begin to help when you know what you're looking to do.
When I attended the course, he spoke about verticals, and it was kind of the first place that I really engaged with the idea of what it was. But if you'd just like to explain what a vertical is.
Yes, sorry, excuse me, a bit of jargon there. We always try to keep that out of the conversation. Vertical is one particular business activity. So if you're looking at selling soap, that's what you're doing, that's your vertical, the business of being clean.
We've spoken in the past about the collaborative economy. Yes. And how people should work smart by working together. What have you seen over the years from people working on their own and not necessarily getting that far compared to how people are turning to collaboration and working together?
I think just speed, essentially, and also kind of liberation of value. It's the best way to describe it. You would have places where there'd be a lot of value locked up in different silos, traditional term for that. Now suddenly you'll find, just with a lot of casuality and the idea of actually focusing around one subject, you'll find that people have been working on something independently, and together they can do it much more quickly.
Have we seen publicly any real signs of success in this, in the public psyche, any large-scale projects that have been on this model?
Many. If I think about a commercial one first, thinking about the fact that Pepsi and Coke have the same advertiser, so Omnicom Publicis merging last September, net worth of now $23 billion.
And it's quite interesting, just talking about that deal, that they're with Omnicom, they're going to make it work, but you look at what's happened over at the other end of the scale with the issue between Burger King and McDonald's, and Heinz getting kicked out of McDonald's because of the relationship of former C-suite staffing.
Very complex, very fast-moving environment, highly iterative. Just goes to show, really, I think you need to be part of it. You need to know exactly what contribution you can make. If you look at things like the business model Canvas, which is run by Alexander Osterwalder, I think Amazon and Apple use it frequently. It enables you to map your business model over and over and over again, because the environment changes so quickly, you need to know how relevant you are in it. And who is big today could be very small tomorrow if you don't think ahead and you're not connected.
We spoke on the course, or I'm being disingenuous. You spoke on the course when we looked at business models. And how many people on the course just didn't realise the importance of actually knowing what your structure is to then know how to market yourself?
Yes, exactly. I think previously you didn't particularly have to know, because your consumer kind of knew who you were. There were many more vagaries, if you like, because it was a much more set system. But now they can get much more information about you. Businesses are much less static. There's so much change and churn at the moment that it's essential to know where you're coming from so you can communicate it really quickly. And also the mystery that advertisers used to rely on manufacturers used to rely on. They could kind of hide behind it. Things like the golden hour we used to have, there was a crisis, you could have an hour to get your people together. Now that's gone. Consumers can see right into the middle of you. It's not possible to be so opaque anymore. You have to be much more transparent.
Yeah, I was just about to say, so transparency clearly is the way forward. And when it comes to communications, it's got to be a case that through strategy, you've got to have the answers ready and have contingency in place for various outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. And to have a very, very simple operating model as well, and enables you to have that kind of flexibility, to have a very portable message when you're looking at so many people being bombarded by so many messages. I think having a very clear, succinct, portable, central strategy enables you to be very flexible.
So we were just on the Tech Hub floor, and there's various businesses all working on their own, and there's a lot of chatter around the kitchen area where different people were talking about their own operations. Now, do you find that this has been an ideal environment for Catch London to really work from?
Really, yes. Because you can be part of the ecosystem here, you can pick up on things very, very quickly. And the essential element of rapid online communication is having offline too. So being able to talk to people, building relationships, building trust very quickly, being able to call them very quickly to actually get behind the scenes. Online's really, really good, but I think if you try to really resolve something very quickly, you've gone to a site and found there's an email address, you know that's kind of a dead connection, essentially, when speeds are the essence. So behind this highly complex computational network is a highly complex physical person-to-person network too. And a place like this, which has got such a rich variety of tech running around it, if you look at Tech City Map, it's a square mile of the city, techcitymap.com shows you how many connections are made here. That's all happening, but behind that is a very strong personal network too, and that's essential.
I think I've just seen a perfect example of it. We were coming up to the roof and just coming out of the lift, and some guys were coming the other way, and there was a connection in the stairwell saying, oh,
over a beanbag. The connection was personal. I think we were talking about how good it was to be in the sun, literally here in this building. That was all that was required. From that came another personal connection, and then from that came a memory that I did in PR, and then an approach for business.
And surely this has got to be a perfect example of taking the conversation offline.
Absolutely. A perfect example, really, of inbound marketing. So that's supported by my online presence, but then my offline personality, if you like, cuts in, and there we go. Perfect piece of inbound marketing. Yeah.
What would you think is the biggest nightmare to a business? I mean, would it be a case of having the greatest product but being completely anonymous?
Often is, absolutely. Many great products really fail. There's a very big computer security program which was too heavily reliant upon funds from DARPA and funds from the US administration, so it never really marketed itself and has now died. So yes, always a problem. You can have a really, really high growth tech product, you can have something which is great benefit to many people, but people don't understand how to use it and adopt it, and they can't understand very quickly, they won't. So yes, very important to have communication developed. If you look at Apple and their Media Lab, so working with Chiat Day, I think for about 6 years now, the Apple developers have worked with the advertisers from the off as they design new products to realize how you can communicate this and actually how relevant things are, how communicable they are as they're being developed. Because really the proof of the pudding is in the eating, not in the baking.
Do you think that Mark Zuckerberg's got a point when he says that government interference, no matter what the government is, just to widen it out, government interference in the freedoms of the internet are going to basically ruin it?
They certainly could. I think any interference in the freedoms of the internet, that's certainly what Vince Cerf, founder of the Internet too, well, one of the founders of the Internet at DARPA, says. It was designed to be an open network. It's not designed to be a closed one, which is heavily controlled. It just doesn't work that way. It hasn't been built that way. So yeah, certainly government interference. And certainly on that, I'll say Chamath Palihapitiya, I think he's got 5 million in Bitcoin, or 5 billion. A certain big amount anyway, former Facebook exec, investor in a lot of biotech and everything else. Says the heroes of today, if you like. Of yesteryear, there were people like Gandhi. now perhaps people are looking, certainly in terms of visibility around people like Zuckerberg. So tech people certainly seem to be very much in the mind of people at the moment. They seem to be almost steering the governance of the world.
Tim Berners-Lee, just off the back of that one, Tim Berners-Lee made the statement that maybe we should have a form of Bill of Rights with the internet and our rights as individuals towards its use and our privacy upon it, because we can't see, or he can't see, the day where the internet in some form or another won't exist. Therefore, the rights we have as human beings, maybe we should have our rights on how the internet is used, governed, relates to us as individuals.
Absolutely. That was a big conversation last week, really. John Battelle was talking about it a lot. And the UN in 2012 did, I think, pass a resolution, but certainly a lot of noise around it being a basic human right. So
how things have changed.
I think 5 years before, they considered that it could never happen. But now, certainly, yes, in 2012, the UN passed some kind of motion or resolution on the internet being a basic human right, access to it certainly being that right.
So looking to the future, where do you hope that Catch London will be going from here?
So from here, I think replicate what we do locally here, globally. So we're already present in San Francisco. I think we do a lot of development there and help bring a lot of tech from London to San Francisco and also keep it here. Also working with quite a few people in Brussels. I imagine we start to really try and help revive the European economy in terms of tech. A lot of work, Horizon 2020 is a big program there. Nina Kroes, Vice President of the European Commission, very into, on her team, very into sustaining growth, actually fueling growth. Certainly in Spain, Portugal, lots of challenged countries through use of IT and coding. So yeah, short answer to the question, I see as enabling European tech to enter global markets.
When we were talking in the corridor earlier, we were saying about how a lot of tech people are incredibly smart people. They've got great ideas, they're working on great products, but actually it comes back to the classic case of communications are key. Absolutely. To it, to letting people know. If you had 1 to 3 tips over what people should do as an organization to be aware of the market and to be aware of how to communicate to the market, what would they be?
I think they'd be UX, user experience, user integration, and data. So first of all, data, how are you making these decisions? What are you basing them on? When you may have an assumption about how your product's going to work, data will tell you what's wrong with that assumption. Then you can put something in that's right about it. User experience, how's it working? Is you getting any feedback? Have you actually been to people who might want to use it, or is it all in your head? How many voices have you got in your head telling you about this product? User integration, same thing as well. When it's working with people, how can you make it better? And that never stops. So always gathering data, always finding out what the experience is like, always finding out what the integration is like. With that, you really can't go wrong.
A couple of final things. The success rate of startups, it's always going to be a steep challenge, because it's one thing to have a good idea. It's another thing to be able to build on it. The success rate you were mentioning earlier is roughly 3%, was it?
3%, yes.
Why do you feel it's at that number and it's not larger?
I think there isn't really the opportunity to do this very quickly, very easily. There's an ecosystem here that isn't really known about. I know somebody who had 10 million hits on a YouTube video who'd never even been here until I approached them. There isn't that kind of all-embracing environment in the rest of the economy. I think that's why it's very difficult to break out from here and apply yourself to the rest of the economy.
If people wanted to find out about Catch London, what you guys do, where can they find that out?
Thank you. CatchLondon.com, at Catch London on Twitter.
And the absolute final thing. If it came to sailing off on a yacht, just taking it easy for the rest of your life with, you know, billions and billions of bitcoins or whatever currency exists at that point, or working until dropping, what kind of person are you?
I think I'd do a bit of Inmarsat on a yacht and do some work until dropping tea.
Matt, thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Cafe SoCo on Podomatic, a free download from dangoldmedia.com.